Okay, so we're diving into some fascinating material today. A legal case called Emerald Hills HOA v. Peters.
Sounds intriguing.
It is. It's a real property law head-scratcher. And it all comes down to something you might not think is that exciting at first. A subdivision plat.
A plat map. Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, we're going to figure out if one of those plat maps can actually create a legally binding easement. And what happens when people try to change those property rights down the line? Our mission, if you choose to accept it, is to understand how much power these seemingly simple documents have and how they protect property owners.
I'm in. Let's do it. You know these sources you gave me? They lay out a story over a bunch of years with a clear timeline and then these legal arguments that just keep escalating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking a subdivision plat from 1969, then someone tries to reorganize access in 2001, and then boom, the Peters buy a property in 2009, and all heck breaks loose with the Homeowners Association.
Sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It kind of is. And the core question is, did that original plat from 69 create an express easement for the Peters property? And could a later agreement just wipe that right out without them even knowing about it?
That's a big question. Lots to unpack there.
There is.
So let's go back to the very beginning, back in 1969.
Okay.
We have a landowner named Shepard. They sell a big chunk of property to Posner, but hold on to a piece called Parcel 765, and they reserve some access rights through something called the right-of-way parcel. Then Posner develops the Emerald Hills subdivision. So what's the crucial thing that happens during this development?
The key here is that Posner creates a subdivision plat as he's developing Emerald Hills. And this is important because it's not just some map of the new neighborhood. Mm-hmm. This plat is a serious legal document.
Interesting.
Yeah, this particular plat shows an ingress-egress easement, which just means the right to get in and out of a property on a piece of land called the triangular parcel. And this easement is specifically for the benefit of Parcel 765 that Land Shepherd kept.
Ah, so this plat becomes like the foundation for the whole legal battle.
Exactly. It's the very first recording of property rights related to access in this whole situation.
Fascinating. Okay, so let's jump ahead a few decades to 2001.
Right.
Now, a cross-easement agreement appears on the scene.
Okay.
What was the purpose of this agreement and who was involved?
Well, if we look at the big picture, this 2001 cross-easement agreement was basically an attempt to change some of the access arrangements. They were mainly focused on open space areas between Emerald Hills and another subdivision next door called Green Ridge.
So they were trying to redraw the lines a bit.
Exactly. But here's the really important part. The only people involved in this agreement were Posner, the original developer of Emerald Hills, and another developer from Green Ridge. Yeah. The owners of Parcel 765 at that time, the people who owned it before the Peters, they weren't part of this agreement at all.
Huh. That seems like a big oversight.
It definitely is.
So we've got this original easement on the plat. And then years later, an agreement tries to change things. But the property owners who benefit from that easement aren't even involved.
Yeah. And then in 2009, the Peters come along.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Right. They buy Parcel 765, which, according to that 1969 plat, has this easement running across the triangular parcel. And, of course, they want to use it.
Makes sense.
So they go through the whole process, get county approval to build a driveway on that triangular parcel.
And that's when the trouble really starts.
Boom. That's when the Emerald Hills Homeowners Association files a lawsuit saying, no way, there's no easement here.
So they're claiming the Peters don't have the right to use that access.
Exactly.
So what are the main arguments each side is making in court?
Well, the big legal question is, does that 1969 subdivision plat actually create a binding express easement for the Peters property?
Okay.
The circuit court initially said, no, it doesn't. Their reasoning was basically, we don't see the words easement written out in a separate deed.
It sounds like they were looking for very specific language.
Right.
But I'm guessing that's not the end of the story.
Nope. The appellate courts took a different look at the situation.
And what was their logic in overturning the lower court's decision?
This brings up a really important point about how much legal weight we give to these subdivision plats.
Okay.
The appellate courts said those markings and legends on the plat, they did meet the legal requirements of something called the statute of frauds.
Remind me what the statute of frauds is all about.
Sure. It's basically a legal principle that says certain agreements, like ones dealing with land, have to be in writing to be enforceable.
Makes sense.
The appellate court recognized that a plat, if it's signed and officially recorded it, can absolutely establish an express easement, even if you don't see the word easement spelled out in a separate deed.
So the plat itself counts as the written documentation.
Yes.
Okay, so it sounds like this hinges on how Maryland law treats Platts.
Right. And this is where things get really interesting. The Maryland courts, they use something called the Dubrowin-Cobrine test to figure out if a plat actually creates an express easement.
A legal checklist of sorts.
Exactly. So first, like we talked about, it has to comply with the statute of frauds. It has to be in writing and signed. In this case, Posner, the developer, he signed and recorded that Emerald Hills plat. So check on that one.
Okay. What else is on the checklist?
Second, the plat has to clearly show what's called the servient estate. That's the property burdened by the easement, in this case, the triangular parcel. And it also has to show the dominant estate, the property that benefits from the easement, which is parcel 765.
So it has to be crystal clear which properties are involved.
Exactly. And the plat did that through its layout, the lines it drew, and the labels it used for different parcels.
Right. I remember from the materials that the plat labeled the triangular parcel and showed exactly where it was in relation to parcel 765.
Exactly. And the third thing on the Dubrowin-Cobrine test is that the plat has to clearly describe the easement itself. In this case, the plat had an ingress-egress legend right on the triangular parcel, and it even had lines and markings showing the path for access. The court said, yep, that's detailed enough to describe the easement.
So the 1969 plat passed the test in the appellate court's eyes.
It did.
There was also a really important legal principle in the materials that I think connects all of this together.
What's really fascinating here is this legal idea that when you reference a plat in a deed, it's like you're incorporating that plat as part of the deed itself.
So even though the Peters' own deed didn't specifically list the easement because it referenced the subdivision plat, all the plat's details, including that easement, became legally binding.
It's like they were written right into the deed.
So the plat essentially became part of the title for all the property owners in Emerald Hills, including the Homeowners Association when they got the common areas in 2006.
Exactly. The HOA's own deed would have referenced that same 1969 plat that showed the easement benefiting parcel 765. So legally, they were stuck with those original terms.
So the court decided the plat created a valid easement.
Mm-hmm.
But then the HOA argued that the 2001 cross easement agreement eliminated that easement. Why didn't the courts buy that argument?
Well, the basic legal rule is that the HOA, as the owner of the triangular parcel, which is the servient estate, can't just get rid of an express easement on their own.
I see.
An easement is a real property right that belongs to the Peters who own the dominant estate, the property benefiting from the easement. It's not something the HOA can just decide to erase.
And remember, the Peters or the people who owned the property before them, they were never part of that 2001 agreement. They never said, okay, sure, take away our access.
Precisely.
It seems like a pretty basic principle of property law.
Yeah.
You can't just eliminate someone else's property right without their agreement.
Absolutely. And there's even a Maryland law that backs this up, Emling Code Section 2114. It basically says that easements last forever unless there's a specific limitation written into the document that created them.
Okay.
And since the 1969 plat didn't put any time limit on the easement, and since the Peters never agreed to give up their access, that 2001 agreement meant nothing when it came to their easement.
Wow. So in the end, the Peters won this whole legal fight.
They did.
What are the bigger lessons here? What should law students, especially, or really anyone dealing with property, take away from this case?
Emerald Hills v. Peters, it's a big one. For property lawyers, it's a huge reminder that subdivision plats, they're not just pictures. They can create real legal property rights like easements. When you're advising clients on any land deal, you've got to go beyond the deed and look at any plats that are mentioned.
Good advice.
And for anyone trying to change or get rid of an easement, this case makes it clear you absolutely have to get consent from all the dominant estate owners of folks who benefit from that easement. You can't just mess with their property rights without their okay.
So for homeowners associations and developers, what are the key takeaways from this case?
For HOAs and developers, this case screams that recorded subdivision plats create real legal obligations that have real consequences. If anything's vague or unclear in those descriptions on those plats, it can lead to some serious legal trouble later on.
So dot your I's and cross your T's.
Exactly. Be precise, be thorough when you're creating these documents. There's a great quote that sums this up. The owner of a servient estate cannot unilaterally extinguish an express easement.
Powerful stuff.
It is. That's something you need to really understand to avoid these kinds of legal battles.
Okay, so for our listener, what does all of this mean? Well, this deep dive into Emerald Hills HOA v. Peters reveals how much legal weight a subdivision plat can actually have. It shows how important it is to be meticulous with record keeping in property law, and that once property rights are established, they're not easy to just undo or change without everyone's consent. This case shows that even technical documents like plats can have a huge and lasting impact on property owners.
It really makes you think. In a world where everything is so complex with documents and agreements, how can people make sure their property rights are clear and protected from changes they don't agree with? The story of the Peters reminds us to look beyond the main deed and check out all the other documents that are referenced, especially those subdivision plats. It shows that sometimes the biggest legal battles are fought over the tiniest lines on a map that were drawn years and years ago.
Great advice. Thanks for joining me for this deep dive.
My pleasure.